you, Drew. And I'd like to recognize Dave Varner, who's one of my counterparts in Eastern Nebraska, and Charlie Wertman, who you just heard speak. Both of them provide valuable input to the project. First, need to talk about the title of this project. We refer to it as the Nebraska Soybean and Feed Grains Profitability Project. And being from Nebraska, you're probably wondering why the word corn isn't in there. Well, this is a politically correct title for a project because it was first funded as a pilot project by the Nebraska Soybean Board. So thus, soybeans is first. And in the late 80s, you could still find a lot of grain sorghum in eastern Nebraska. Okay, and of course, we had growers who were in the project that were working with grain sorghum. We wanted growers in the project that were grain sorghum producers. So we thought we better call it feed grains. Well, lo and behold, you can't find a field of grain sorghum any longer in eastern Nebraska. You'd have to drive for hours to find a field, and we probably should change the title, but it's still working, and thus the name for soybean and feed grains. This is a discussion about a process. Okay, I'm all about processes, developing a framework of getting the job done and so forth. And it's an on-farm program designed to provide farm operators with an understanding of how to conduct crop research on their farms using their own machinery. Comparisons are scientifically designed, statistically analyzed, and conducted for 3 years to assure useful and reliable information. Now, the program was launched in 1989, and early in my career, I realized that farmers were making inferences and making decisions based on either the lack of good information or no information at all. Oftentimes, I would go to twilight tours and plot demonstrations and seed corn meetings and so forth. And they would compare A versus B, where they'd split the field in half. And lo and behold, B is much better than A. And you should implement this in your farming operation, and you'll make a lot more money. Well, I kept having flashbacks from graduate school about statistics and experimental design, and knowing that that wasn't necessarily good to make those kind of statements based on just that type of information. And I also realized in working with growers, it's in production agriculture, it's what you think you know that you really don't know that can really hurt you. And I had a advisor in graduate school that often used that term. I wish I could coin that myself, but it was his term. And if you think about it, there's a lot of truth to that. It's what you think you know that you really don't know that can really hurt you. And when you're dealing with six-figure production loans, and in today's world, even seven-figure production loans, you make the wrong decision, and it can cost you big bucks. It can really impact your family and operation. So in the late 80s, I had an idea, along with a gentleman by the name of Dr. Bob Stogard, who is no longer at the University of Nebraska. He's now at Montana State University, and we had this vision, if you would, of putting together a group of farmers in a pilot project to do on-farm research, and we got funding from the Nebraska Soybean Board. We even had a graduate student in the Department of Ag Econ who evaluated the effectiveness of doing on-farm research and as far as technology transfer, and lo and behold, we were off and running. And in this project, growers typically evaluate what they're currently doing versus something different, an alternative practice, okay? And so the first 12 growers we had, they were looking at things like conservation tillage versus their conventional tillage. Or a few of them were looking at hybrids and varieties. But I will make the statement now that in 2010, and for the last 10 years, we really discourage growers from looking at hybrid and variety evaluation because we're working and living in a corn and soybean world. And at the time you think you found the right hybrid, next year it isn't going to be available. The companies turn around hybrids and varieties so quickly that it's just something we don't encourage guys to evaluate because it changes. We encourage members to identify what's important to their production operation. Let it be their idea. Now, I will tell you that we have people that come to us, growers who come to us, who will ask us, geez, you know, I still want to stay in a group and be with the group. I can't think of anything next year what to evaluate or compare. You got any ideas? And we'll sit down with them and talk to them about their operation. I'm trying to find my cursor here. Anyway, there it is. Upon graduation, and we have a graduation ceremony where we make sure the people who have participated for 3 years and completed their on-farm research received a nice frame plaque. Don't just give them a certificate because they'll fold it up and stick it in their shirt pocket. And then what we want is we want the University of Nebraska to be on their walls in their house or their office so other people can see it, and every time they walk in there and see it on the wall, they feel good about it. Okay? And we'll do this in front of a public audience, and that's worked very well, and it doesn't cost much. We usually get the dean to put his name on there as well, and we get a little mileage out of that. We have many repeat members. In fact, I have one, I was thinking about this just seconds ago, I have one individual who has been in the group since 1989, and he's done a lot of good things, and a lot of good things have changed his operation. We have private industry, if you would, people who help support our program. And what they do is they collect data during the growing season and as well at harvest time. And they've been very important to this project. They're good crop consultants, good agronomists, and they want to be with these good growers. They want to work side by side with them. They want a relationship as well. And they want to hear the information firsthand, so they can pass it on to other clientels. So what this whole project is a common venue, common structure, a common process for conducting on-farm research. And whether it's the grower themselves, or whether it might be Charles Wortman, a university faculty member, or maybe an industry agronomist wants to conduct some on-farm research and have the power of the N overseeing it and giving it credibility. Our members are forward-thinking. They value continued education. They value the partnership with the university. They like to associate with top producers, and they have told us that a number of times that what we really like is meeting people that we otherwise would not have met in a common venue in discussing crop production topics. They're optimistic. When corn was $1.70 a bushel at the elevator, that wasn't a problem. They're looking, thinking forward, futuristics. They're committed to research and education, and we view some of these individuals as stakeholders when times were tough at the university, when times were tough at the Institute of Ag and Natural Resources. We view some of these people as stakeholders to testify on the importance of the work the university is doing. And they're going to be here tomorrow. They're tomorrow's producers. Now, in the world of information generation and so forth, it has many sources, as you well know. We have bench scientists who deal with basic research and pass that information on to faculty who are working in applied research. Extension educators have collaborations with faculty who are doing applied research, as well as the farmer. Okay, it's back and forth. We learn a lot from the farm operators we've worked with over the years. I think we would all agree with that, okay? They've taught us something as well. And of course, the private sector is a big source of new information. They're generating new technologies. So we're all in communication, and it all boils down to profitability. If there isn't money to be made at it, typically it doesn't go very far, okay? And in the world of production ag. Now this is Bill. If you've met Bill, you'll never forget it. Okay, he's an interesting individual. He's a dry land farmer. Farms a couple thousand acres, and he wears bib overhauls. But Bill knows how to make money. He's been successful at it, farming. And he's always asking questions about production topics, wanting to know the truth, okay? And being a dry land or rain-fed farmer, his life, 1 year may be very productive, and the next year it may not be near as productive. When clouds are blowing over his fields, they may be ready to unload their supply of moisture over his corn and soybeans, or they may be loading up for Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana, which we typically make fun of. And this photo's got a few years on it, because in this scene, Bill was evaluating no-till farming practices versus his conventional farming practices. And I'm here to tell you that Bill made a switch here a number of years ago and is now a no-tiller. Now, the gentleman on the left is Dale. Dale lives 15 miles from Bill, and Dale has a totally different world of resources to work with. He has land that is tabletop flat and very deep, lush soils, highly productive, and he has one of the most dynamic aquifers underneath that farmland of any place in the world. And Dale's farming practices are different. His level of risk is different. But yet, Dale and Bill have similar concerns and problems and challenges in the day-to-day world of growing corn and soybeans. So when we sit down with them, and by the way, the gentleman on the right is Dave Varner, who I recognized earlier, extension educator, we must ask a well-defined research question. And we try to focus on one practice and not to confound the research with more than one factor, one treatment. And we must know whether we can answer the question based on the data that we're going to generate. So in testing the hypothesis, we'll sit down with the grower and we'll design the field layout. And that field layout may involve GIS technology, and GPS technology in today's world, overlaying it over a field field boundaries, and it can be a square field that has the same row length from one end of the field to the other, or it might be on a field like this that has terraces and every row length is different. Or we can do it like we did from the start in early years, and we still do this today. We can do it on an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. We can set out what the treatments are going to be, the randomization of those treatments, what we're going to weigh and what we're not going to weigh, and the number of replications. We also need to determine what we're going to measure in that field. And depending upon the research study, we may need to measure insect pressure or weed densities, plant populations. Most of the time, if not all the time, we're going to measure yield, because that's what the farmer gets paid for, the number of bushels he takes to the elevator for sale. But in the process of doing that, we might want to know some other information on what impacted that yield. And so it may involve grid sampling of the field for phosphorus. We have one private industry cooperator that works with us who, on the fields that he works with growers, he'll take aerial photographs using infrared technology. And you can just vaguely see the strips in this field. But they're there. And in this particular slide, they're more evident. And so that provides some interesting information and may answer some questions. Again, we emphasize limit the number of treatments. Oftentimes when growers approach us, they want to research the entire toolbox, and that just doesn't set well with statisticians and experimental design from an experimental design perspective. So we encourage them to limit the number of treatments. We try to emphasize that the treatment should be the only man-made variable in the field. So we try to capture a discussion on what the history of that field is. Did you do any liming comparisons in that field in recent years that may affect the treatment performance? And so we try to, you know, ask those kind of questions. And we spent this afternoon talking a lot about randomization and replication, and so we need to emphasize that when we sit down with the growers, and most of them understand why we're doing this after this discussion. And we'll do this discussion in a consultation session, usually in the month of December, January, and February. We sit down with growers for 2-3 hours in some cases, and we talk about the plot layout and why we're going to replicate and what we're going to harvest and why we're going to leave some border rows and so forth and so on. So they have a clear picture of all this. So randomization ensures that favoritism is not given towards the treatment, and of course replication reduces the possibility that results are due to chance rather than the treatment. And so when we're working with growers, and there's two treatments, A versus B, we typically set these up in a paired comparison design. We emphasize the number of pairs. We draw the protocol up with at least 7 pairs, and we emphasize that if we can't generate at least 5, then the data won't be of use or won't be published. And I'll get to that in a second on our quality control efforts. With more than 2 treatments, and I usually have a handful of these a year, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that, where a grower is looking at maybe 3 or 4 treatments, we'll set these up in a randomized complete dock design. And again, we design them having 5 blocks or 5 reps, and we will work with 4, but if we have anything less than 4, we won't publish the data or use it. For some of the growers, the first time, you have to physically go out there and flag the rows or the treatments for them. And the one thing I would tell you, in the world of no-till, it makes it a lot easier than it was years ago when you went out and tilled the ground prior to establishing where the treatments were going to be, because now all you have to do is count rows, put a flag down. Before, it was all blank, and you had to get the tape measure, the measuring wheel out, and measure where those flags had to go, and hoped they were going to match up with your planner afterwards. So today it's a lot easier in the no-till world. And we will visit with them and remind them just prior to the planting season to go over their protocol, their printed protocol, to review the map, to review what the specifics are, what they're going to do. So if there's any questions, they can give us a call before they get out there and start rolling. We do the same thing at harvest time, and this is where we sometimes have mistakes. They, especially with the paired comparison designs, they will harvest the entire treatment and weigh it instead of taking 2 weights out of there to develop a pair, and of course we can't use that data. So it's important that we communicate back and forth on what needs to be done and when it needs to be done. And if you notice here, we still use weigh wagons occasionally, and this one happens to have a seed company's name on the side, and this happens to be one of our industry people that collaborates with us, and we feel real confident about the numbers they're generating. This was not a seed corn trial. Like I told you, we don't evaluate hybrids and varieties for their performance. This happened to be another study and something related, if I remember, to insect control. So we encourage the producers to follow the experimental plan and record deviations from the plan. If something goes wrong, don't hide it. Record it. Who are you lying to if you try to sneak something through? The data we send to our quality control person, and that is a retired soil scientist from the University of Nebraska who did a lot of on-farm research before his retirement. And Ed is our statistician, if you would, and he prepares the data for the stat lab, and it all goes through the stat lab on campus. And yes, we have to pay for that. And that's why we charge the growers $150. A year for participating in this project. We visit with the growers, make sure they understand this discussion about confidence levels, and you know, we talk about if you're a brain surgeon, you probably want to be using 99% confidence level, whereas in agriculture, 90% is acceptable and for a lot of things that we're working with in the world of agriculture. We present the data in this format. This happens to be a liming versus no lime study. And again, we're in eastern Nebraska in our dryland environment. We're starting to see pH levels decline. And this farmer actually started this study in 1995, but I didn't have room on this slide to put all the years, so I just put the last 10. And so he's in a corn bean rotation, and this is how we present the data both to the grower and as well as to the public. The important thing for the grower, though, is the bottom line is profitability. And so we sit down with the growers during our consultation, and we generate the cost of production, the profitability for treatment A versus treatment B. And that information is private. That's, they take it home, we print it off, they take it home, and no one else gets to see it. And we include everything they want to include into that economic analysis. And we've had the Nebraska Farm Business Association, we had them develop for us a analysis package where we can capture even living expenses if they want to include that in their cost of production. And we do have a few growers that do that. And so this is very valuable to them, knowing if there was a difference in treatment effect, did it pay for itself? Is it generating more profitability to my operation? So we know that on-farm research allows you to test agronomic practices using your soil, because oftentimes farmers will say, yes, you tell me it works at your research station, but does it work on my farm? And I need to know that. And in today's world, with yield monitors, we're finding out that it's much easier to capture that information, although yield monitors provide challenges. And those challenges are, of course, calibration. Secondly, years ago, when I left the field with a way wagon, I had the data in my hands. It was in black and white on a sheet of paper. Today, it's in that little black box in that combine, and I have to capture that information before I leave the field. And sometimes that can be a challenge with yield monitors, okay? And it's not impossible, but it makes it a little more difficult, I think. Especially if I'm not there, and I can't be everywhere as in collecting all the data. We gather the growers together in March, early March. We invite the public. We charge the public $50 to attend. We have found that a few growers have figured out, you know, it's cheaper for me to pay $50 and hear all the results than to pay $150 and conduct the research. And so I don't know how we're going to address that, because it has affected our numbers somewhat as far as participation. But again, we've been doing this for 20 years. But we get good turnout, we get a lot of good discussion and questions. We encourage faculty like Charles to be there, who's a nutrient management specialist. So if something comes up in the world of nitrogen management, he can be there because he has a good understanding of the research that's been conducted and the status of the management of nitrogen in corn and soybean production in eastern Nebraska. We encourage other faculty to come, but that isn't always the case. So good data leads to sound management decisions. Decisions should be based on multi-year comparisons. Cost-benefit ratio, we emphasize that. And how will your management plan change based on the results? Dr. Wertman did a survey back in 2005, and he found here some of the benefits from 118 past and present participants. And as you can see here, there's significant dollar impact. And as you look at participants' comments over time, some have indicated this as the above average or one of the best educational opportunities I've participated in. It's a positive image to be a part of this group of farm operators. This gentleman indicated that he saved $7 to $8 per acre on 25 acres. This particular grower estimated the value to his operation was $15,000 based on a starter fertilizer management change in his farm. Again, some really positive impact results. And so what this is, it's a process for turning all this information into something that has value. We do have a website, and in Nebraska, this isn't going to be hot for me in this room, but in Nebraska, you're welcome to write down this website address. We have other groups of educators that are conducting on-farm research, only using a different approach. This one, again, the topics that are being looked at are being lifted up by the growers because they know what's important to their operation. We have a quad county effort where there's four counties of educators are conducting research. They have their results. We have our results at this website. And they tend to identify things what they think are important to the corn and soybean world and then ask farmers to conduct those research projects. So with that, are there any questions? Yes?
I was wondering about when the farmers make the selections of things to test. Mm-hmm. Are you trying to get more than one farmer to be testing the same thing for the...
That's a very good question, and what we have found over time is that if farmer A has this question, likely farmer B has that same question. And so we have multiple studies over time that looked at conventional tillage versus no-till, or looked at a specific transgenic trait in a corn hybrid compared to the same hybrid with without that transgenic trait.
So then you'll take the data and break it into comparisons that could be compared against each other?
No, the data stands alone for each farm. We haven't accumulated the data over farms as replications. No, that could be done. Some of the things that we need to do that we could do better is one, involve the research, the academic research community in the discussion and the whole planning process. We could do a better job of that. We could do a better job of marketing, but I wear a lot of other hats, so you can only do so much in the time and resources allotted. And we should be charging more.
And if you did aggregate that kind of data, I mean, maybe others have experience, how would you grab it and have farmers feel comfortable about that their confidentiality is maintained even if that data is being used? I mean, that's a big challenge.
Confidentiality, when we show comparison results, we don't put up we just put up the costs that are directly related to that topic. If they're looking at two different sources of nitrogen in the production of corn, we will just identify nitrogen source A and nitrogen source B. We wouldn't put up their living expenses and things like that. Or their depreciation costs, or their interest rate on their loan, and things like that. Okay, thank you.